Yeah, hello. Sorry, something came up just as you were getting ready to turn the mic over to me. So we are here for the Guiding Light, Bernadette Roberts. What is the Self is what I'm reading from. And it looks like I'm starting on page 23. That's amazing that I've been doing it all this time and we're all the way up to page 23. About halfway down the page, the paragraph that I have marked starts with the words, the breakthrough. So let's have a peek. I'm actually going to back up a little bit or else this paragraph won't make sense. So in the previous paragraph, she has said that the empty center, and again, you know, I always use this Kleenex here to represent the empty center, right? The empty center is not consciousness, self, or ego. Rather, the empty center is the divine. And what experiences this whole or empty center is consciousness or the self. So again, consciousness experiences the divine through the empty center. But the empty center is the divine. Some people refer to the empty center as the true self, and affirm that the true self is no self. This opening up is experienced by consciousness as a new level of awareness, virtually a new dimension of its own existence. That's pretty interesting, an entirely new dimension of its own existence. And this new awareness we call God consciousness. So that's now what this next paragraph is referring to as the breakthrough. This breakthrough has not altered the reflexive mechanism of the mind. And we haven't talked about the reflexive mechanism in several weeks, but the reflexive mechanism, remember, was the mind bending upon itself so that the mind knows the mind, right? It's both the subject and its own object. So this breakthrough, the divine breaking through consciousness, has not altered the reflexive mechanism of the mind. The only difference now is that mind no longer bends solely on itself or its own ego self-center, but it now bends on a totally divine center, the void or the empty center of self. This means that the unconscious self and the divine are given or known in the same single act of the mind bending on itself, which act or function, as we have said, is self or consciousness. Self-awareness goes right on, only now, instead of unconscious self-awareness, there is unconscious God awareness due to the divine whole in the center. The reflexive mechanism has not been changed or altered. Rather, the center of consciousness has changed. Although this change affects the whole of consciousness or self, it does not do away with it. Indeed, we could not speak of a true self unless the mind continued to bend on itself and its divine center. So she is describing, in the best way that she knows how, this experience of awakening to what we would call the second principle of God. Remember, this is still not awakening to the first principle, because we still have consciousness, but there's now a hole in consciousness. And so previously what was happening, we'll use the Kleenexes again to show you, previously when we had the ego, and remember, even with the ego, there's this teeny tiny divine center. There's always a hole. You can never have 100% ego, right? But there's this teeny, teeny, tiny divine center. So before, when the mind was bending on itself, it was the mind knowing the ego, right? The mind bending on itself, and the mind knowing the ego. And so when the mind says, I am so-and-so, what it was really referring to was the ego self. I like this, and I don't like this, and I want this, and I don't want this, right? How would you know all of that unless the awareness of mind was bending on the ego self? You know yourself as the ego is really what's happening. You know yourself as the ego. Well, she's saying the same reflexive mechanism is still here. And she has told us earlier that it's the reflexive mechanism itself that gives us a sense of self. Now think about this for a moment. This will be a review. But this is what gives us a sense of self. I know myself. I know I can't stand it when people talk on and on and on and on. It drives me crazy every time, you know, right? I know myself. I'm the one who can't stand people talking on and on and on. But see, that gives me a sense of self, right? That's who I am. So now what's happening is awareness is still bending on itself, only now when it's bending on itself, it looks down and it sees this great big hole. See, it bends and sees this great big hole. So there's still this sense of self because there's still an I here who is aware of, and in this case, the divine. So I'm now aware of myself as the emptiness. Right? I'm no longer the one who doesn't like people who talk on and on and on and on. I'm now this emptiness. But there's still a sense of self. And this is important because as we go on, once we transcend consciousness entirely to the first principle of God, this whole reflexive mechanism bending on itself is no more. There's nothing knowing something else. There's nothing knowing the ego, and there's nothing knowing the divine self. We're not there yet, but it's important to remember that Bernadette Roberts defines the bending action itself, the knowing of self, as self. Now, again, the awareness bending on ego the false self. She doesn't call it the false self, but we could call that the false self. And then we could call the awareness bending on the divine center as the true self, right? But in both cases, there's a sense of self. So I'll read that paragraph again. This breakthrough has not altered the reflexive mechanism of the mind. The only difference now is that the mind no longer bends solely on itself or its own self-center, but it now bends on a totally divine center, the void or the empty center of self. This means that the unconscious self and the divine are given or known in the same single act of mind bending on itself, which act or function, as we have said, is self or consciousness. Self-awareness goes right on. Only now, instead of unconscious self-awareness, there is unconscious God awareness due to the divine whole in the center. The reflexive mechanism has not been changed or altered. Rather, the center of consciousness has changed. Although this change affects the whole of consciousness or self, it does not do away with it. Indeed, we could not speak of a true self unless the mind continues to bend on itself and its divine center. We were listening to Nisargadatta Maharaj last Wednesday night. And I remember after I finished with that sharing, in fact, the name of that teaching is No Entries Found from the I Am That series. And when I finished that sharing, I said to the people who sat there, you guys are amazing for even sitting and listening to this. Because what Nisargadatta was explaining was that when you awaken to the first principle of God, not his language, but mine, when you awaken to the absolute, there is no sense of self. There is no awareness of self. This is what he was explaining. Do you remember that? Well, she is explaining this in the same way. She hasn't gotten that far yet, but she's saying the reflexive mechanism of mind is what gives you a sense of self. First, it's mind bending on this ego mind, and so you think that's who you are. Now that this divine center has opened up, it's mind or awareness bending on this divine center. So that's who you now perceive yourself as. But there's still the mind bending on mind. There's still an idea of who or what I am. There's still a sense of self. And Nisargadatta was talking about the next level, which is when this reflexive mechanism that she's explaining goes away, and he was telling us there's no sense of self there. It's interesting to really look at these teachers because they teach it in different ways, but if you're paying careful attention, you can tell that they're teaching the same thing. Bernadette continues, having to bend on an empty, unknown center radically affects the mind, virtually forcing it to adjust to a different dimension of knowing. And you might be able to imagine that. I mean, I don't know who you think you are right now as far as knowing your ego self, you know, what you think your likes are, what you think your dislikes are, who you think you love, who you think you don't really like to be around, you're kind of annoyed by this person, what you think your good habits are, what you think your bad habits are. But imagine, I mean, you know all of that based on what she's teaching us by this reflexive mechanism of mind, by you being able to look at what you perceive as you, right? And so you know who you are, what you like, what you don't like. Well, imagine that disappearing and there just being a hole there now. You still have the reflexive mechanism of mind, so you still have the ability to be aware. But now instead of being aware of all of this personality as who you are, you're aware of this hole, of this emptiness, of this nobody. As who you are. And again, she says, having to bend on an empty unknown center radically affects the mind, virtually forcing it to adjust to a different dimension of knowing. And that would be a completely different dimension of knowing, right? An emptiness rather than this personality that you have always felt so sure was you. The mind no longer bends on the usual self center. Instead, it bends on an empty center and a divine it does not know. The mind's unconscious seeing of an empty void in itself is responsible for the phenomenon known as the third eye. This phenomenon is the result of the cloud of unknowing, seeing nothing, as it were. Thus, when the mind sees the divine, it sees nothing. But once this nothing is revealed as the divine, then we call this unknowing true knowing. That's an interesting sentence. We call this unknowing true knowing. I don't know about you guys, but when I first started the spiritual path, especially A Course in Miracles, and I read about knowledge, I used to imagine that when I was awake, I would know everything, kind of like Einstein. Right? I would know everything. I would know how the stars were formed. You know, I would just know everything. She's defining true knowing as unknowing. Right? It's being empty. It's looking and seeing nothing. Think about that. A lot different than maybe what our expectations were, huh? And you know, it's interesting because I can already tell you based on my brief experience or my limited experience of unknowing. I mean, I know much less than I did. I wouldn't say I'm totally unknowing, but there's lots of things I used to think I know that I know I don't know. Right? So I have some unknowing, comparative unknowing, we'll call it that. The less you know, the freer you are. I know that for a fact. knowing is a burden. And that's because knowing, the kind of knowing that we were talking about, comes from believing. You know, I have to defend what I think I know in some way. I have to maintain what I think I know in some way. So there's a burden there. But if I know nothing, there's nothing to defend, nothing to maintain. I'm just presence in the moment, right? Thus, when the mind sees the divine, it sees nothing. But once this nothing is revealed as the divine, then we call this unknowing true knowing. This particular phenomenon, the mind seeing nothing, initially impairs the ordinary function of the mind. Sometimes, however, it borders on ecstasy or becomes ecstasy. Now, it's interesting. I don't know what she's going to say next because I never read ahead. But it's interesting that she says it initially impairs the ordinary function of the mind. Well, that makes sense to me because the mind made decisions based on what it thought it knew by looking at our ego self, by looking at my past, looking at what I learned in the past, you know, what I learned about, you know, George, for example. I know who George is. I know what to expect from George. I know whether when I ask George this question, what he's likely to say or what he's not likely to say, right? Now, suddenly, I don't have that information anymore. I'm looking at emptiness. So if the mind is used to functioning based on acquired knowledge, possibly very distorted knowledge, but acquired knowledge, and now suddenly that acquired knowledge is not there, then the mind initially does not know how to function. I remember in the Course, Jesus referred to this as a period of disorientation. But it's interesting here, and I look forward to turning the page, because she says it initially impairs the ordinary function of the mind, which must mean that the mind somehow learns to adapt to this new dimension. So this particular phenomenon, the mind seeing nothing, initially impairs the ordinary function of the mind. Sometimes, however, it borders on ecstasy or becomes ecstasy. So again, all that burden of knowing has been dropped. And now, even though I don't quite know how to function in this new dimension yet, there's this ecstasy because all of that burden of knowing is gone. And there's just this joy. Physiologically, the third eye can be a painful and annoying experience, and one that may last for years. Because of this phenomenon, some people feel they may be going off the deep end of their journey. A piece of good news, however, is that once the acclimation process is over, which may take years, she says, this phenomenon is no longer a problem or is rarely noticed anymore. So when your old way of functioning, your old way of making decisions, your old way of interpreting the world is suddenly gone, you know, she says for some people it's painful. And my guess is the pain would come from a judgment that it's not supposed to be this way. Right? Absence the judgment, if there's pure acceptance of the change, then there wouldn't be the pain. But if I'm judging, it's not supposed to be this way. I'm still supposed to be able to think and function like I used to. Well, then it could be very painful. Ron says, every minute would be fresh and wonderfully new. I think that adjustment was mentioned in Jeffrey Martin's book. Yeah, and it's interesting that she says it. Sometimes it takes years. At least so far, she's not commenting on what might speed that up. But what might speed that up is understanding that this is normal. Right? This is just what happens when you've awakened. This is normal. So that there's no panic, no fear, no resistance to this new way of experiencing. A piece of good news, however, is that once this acclimation process is over, which may take years, this phenomenon is no longer a problem or is rarely noticed anymore. Look at that. It becomes the new normal, right? It's not even noticed anymore, this big change. The experience of the third eye then is a reflexive consciousness or the knowing self having to adjust to seeing its own empty center, seeing nothingness, first of all, and then eventually seeing this is the divine. Here, the mind is adjusting to a new dimension of knowing, a dimension we call unknowing. So that's all just kind of review. Another point regarding this new state of affairs is that because the change of consciousness has taken place on the unconscious or reflexive level, we may not always be aware of the divine at the conscious or reflective level. This is important to keep in mind because many people think that in this state they will become conscious of the divine at all times, which is neither true, necessary, or even possible. Conscious divine awareness is on a different level of experience than that of a reflecting, remembering, or thinking mind. Rather, this experience is first and foremost on the singular level of our feeling of life and being. With the replacement of the divine center for the self center, our deepest experience of life and being is also our experience of the divine. Divine life and being, as it were. Everything outside this center is seen as relatively superficial or the facade of life and ultimately perishable. But what is outside of this divine center? Self or consciousness, of course. Here, some people like to distinguish between two selves. The divine center they call the true self or the higher self. And self outside this divine center they call the lower self or conditional or non-eternal phenomenal self. Although this terminology may be convenient for the sake of communication, the truth of the matter is quite different. The true center of consciousness is not self. As noted before, the hole in the center of a paper is not the paper. So too, the empty divine center of self or consciousness is not self or consciousness. Self is that which is aware of the divine center, right? So again, here's our hole. This hole, you know, of course, my hole's in a Kleenex. So this hole is not the Kleenex. Right, she's saying in the same way that the divine is not the self, or the divine is not consciousness, but the reflective mechanism is the self, or consciousness. And so this reflexive mechanism, the self, is that which is aware of the divine. The self is aware of the divine, but the divine is not the self. And if you listen to those words very carefully, you can tell another level of awakening has to be coming. Because you still have two. Right? You have a self that is aware of the divine. And a divine that is not the self. So clearly there must be another awakening coming from somewhere. That doesn't sound even finished, right? That doesn't sound done. So, the true center of consciousness is not self. As noted before, the hole in the center of a paper is not the paper. So, too, the empty divine center of self or consciousness is not self or consciousness. Self is that which is aware of its divine center, but it is not itself the center. To have a center of anything, there must also be a circumference. One is only known relative to the other way, to the other. Take away the center and there is no circumference and vice versa. In the unitive state, the divine is the center and self or consciousness is the circumference. take away either one, self or the divine, center or circumference, and both disappear together. Right? And we can see that if we imagine a donut for a moment, right? You have a donut and you have a donut hole. But once you eat that donut, not only do you no longer have a donut, but you also no longer have a donut hole. Right? So again, there's another level of disappearance that's coming. Right now we have consciousness, and it's aware of a divine center. But once the consciousness that's aware of the divine center disappears, the divine center disappears as well. So we've already had, you know, in this book, a radical awakening from the ego self to the divine self. But she keeps pointing towards another radical awakening. And again, this is why we're here listening to this. You know, I talk to people who really firmly believe there's one awakening. I talked to someone just a couple weeks ago. There's not a second awakening. There's not a second death. But what she's telling us is there is. And that's just what we're here to accept. You know, we're here to listen to it. We're here to understand it as well as we can. Again, because she has told us that for her, it was a fearful, painful experience because she didn't know what to expect. And that if we know what to expect, it doesn't need to be as fearful or painful for us. So we're here to gratefully listen to what she has to share with us, even though we couldn't possibly totally understand it. But then it gives us some context so that when these same experiences begin happening to us, we don't have to fear, for example, that we're going mad. Right? We can understand what's happening at these levels of awakening and that these drastic changes in the way we perceive and think are completely normal. And so with that, I will release the mic and see y'all later.